Eagle FM, there I. Hello Namibia, from the golden dunes of Walvisby to the heartbeat of Windhoek, from the Lushi Zambezi to the ratchet beauty of Kunene. A very good afternoon to you, wherever you're tuning in from. I'm your host, Nafa Happy Juju, and I'm here to tell you the stories and the headlines that are making headlines. And I'll be keeping you company up until 14:30 right here on Eagle FM. Now, it's Tuesday, the 7th of October, 2025, and it's 4 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours, and we're stepping deeper into a brand new week. Now, one filled with possibility, purpose, and maybe even a little surprise or two. Now, Tuesdays are a quiet reminder that the week's still young, that there's still time to shift gears, to dream, and to do. So whatever is on your radar today, breathe, reset, and keep moving forward. This is On The Radar News Analysis, the show where we don't just skim the surface. We go beyond the headlines. We unpack the stories and we connect them to you, the people shaping Namibia's heartbeat every single day. And remember, your voice is part of the conversation as well. Only if you dial in and reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn or WhatsApp, or connect with us via Eagle FM app or Eagle FM website. Because here, your thoughts don't just matter. They drive the dialogue. So whether you're in the office, on the road, or chilling at home with your afternoon drink, thank you for choosing Eagle FM as your companion this Tuesday. Stay tuned. This is On The Radar. Namibia's stories explored, unpacked, and brought closer and home to you. Now let's jump into today's top stories. Namibia has joined the global community in commemorating World Space Week 2025, celebrated annually from the 4th of October to the 10th of October under the theme Living in Space. Now, the week-long event, recognized by the United Nations, highlights achievements in space exploration and the role of space science and technology in advancing sustainable development. Speaking at the National Workshop on the celebration of World Space Week, Professor Anicia Peters, Chief Executive Officer of the National Commission on Research, Science and Technology, NCREST, said the theme resonates strongly with Namibia's commitment to scientific innovation and global collaboration. Now, Professor Peters paid tribute to the late Dr. Japie van Zyl, a distinguished Namibian engineer who served as Director of NANSA's Solar System Exploration Directorate, and was awarded NANSA's Outstanding Public Service Medal in 2019. She described him as a source of national pride and inspiration, whose legacy continues to prove that Namibians can make significant contributions to humanity's journey into space. Now, she noted that humility has maintained a continuous presence in space for nearly 25 years through the International Space Station, also known as ISS. Now, the world's most expensive scientific project, a testament to global cooperation and technological advancement. Professor Peters emphasized that Namibia's annual celebration of World Space Week over the past decade has aimed to raise awareness, promote STEM education, foster innovation and encourage youth participation and investment in space science and technology. She expressed satisfaction with the growing number of stakeholders participating in this year's particular event, expanding its reach and impact. Now, highlighting the role of space science in sustainable development, Professor Peters underscored its alignment with Sustainable Development Goal 9, which is industry, innovation and infrastructure, and the broader space of SDGs initiative, which recognizes space technology as a driver of economic growth, job creation, and environmental resilience. Citing recent wildfires in Etosha National Park, she stressed the importance of investing in space-based technologies such as thermal infrared remote sensing to enhance Namibia's early warning and disaster response capabilities. Professor Peters further outlined NCREST's ongoing efforts to advance Namibia's space agenda, including hosting a stakeholder workshop on implementing the Namibia Space Science and Technology Policy, as well as funding national research projects in NATO technology, pardon me, for disaster risk management and earth observation, for crop monitoring, and also co-hosting an upcoming conference on disaster risk management as part of the Climate Change and Futures in Africa conference organized by the Human Science Research Council of South Africa later this month. She encouraged participants and the public to take part in upcoming conferences, which will focus on how space science, which will focus on how space science and technology can support agriculture and disaster risk reduction right here in Namibia. And for now, let's take a listen to Alma Okpalefe, who's speaking at the World Space and is the executive director of the World Space. Let's take a listen.
Okay, so once again, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for having me today. And as you know, we are in the middle of World Space Week. And it's always a great pleasure for me to see World Space being celebrated across the globe, even as far as Namibia. There's something that started roughly 26 years ago, being spearheaded by an organization in the US, and is now celebrated across more than 90 countries in the world. So we're very happy to see this work. So I just wanted to give a little bit of background about World Space Week, because a lot of people celebrate it, but they don't necessarily understand the genesis of World Space Week. Now, World Space Week was declared by the UN roughly 26 years ago, and it starts from the 4th of October and runs to the 10th of October. And these are two very symbolic dates, which starts with the 4th being the launch of Sputnik 1, and the 10th being the coming into effect of the Outer Space Treaties. So the purpose of this World Space Week is really, let's say, the equivalent of the data space. So it's supposed to be a time where the global focus is on the space sector. More often than everybody is using space technology in one way or the other. But a lot of people are actually using it, whether you're using a memory phone, pillow, you're using GPS on your phone, you're even using your phone or watching TV. You are relying on space-enabled technology. So this period of time is time we like to focus on space, focus on the achievements, and also in doing that, also look at some of the challenges experienced with the growth of the space sector. So now, World Space Week, over time, has become the biggest or largest space event of Earth. As of last year, we recorded in excess of 15,000 events over 90 countries across the globe. And of course, millions were reached, millions via social media, etc. And the power of this is that when we're able to put on all these events across the globe, for instance, now we're meeting in Namibia, but simultaneously events are happening to understand the importance of space and to support the global industry. We found that this form of synchronization has been very, very impactful, especially in developing nations. For instance, in nearby South Africa, it is through the celebration of World Space Week that SANSA, which is the South African Space Agency, was set up after years of individuals coming together to support and celebrate World Space Week. So, like I said, the benefit is to attract greater societal attention. And in doing that, educate the public about space, about the benefits. I would imagine in Namibia, whilst the space sector is growing, there is still room for growth. So we utilize things more Space Week in the way you're doing now to educate the public about space and to build the workforce of tomorrow by inspiring the students to start looking at careers in STEM and space science that will position them to not only flourish in Namibia, but be part of the global sector. And also we use this time to promote events or organizations that exist within the space sector. So who participates in World Space Week? The simple answer is everybody. World Space Week is meant for everyone, whether you're a space company, a school, space agency, a planetarium, whether you're just an enthusiast, somebody who's interested in space. As you can see from some of the pictures here, you can see the wide way in which World Space Week is celebrated across the globe. In China, Austria, Thailand, this is just very few of the images that we have from across the globe to show the wide participation we have. Now, in the background, you have the World Space Week Association, of which I'm the executive director, and we partner with the UN to ensure that the message of space reaches the globe through World Space Week. And so we are an international non-profit organization registered in the US, and we're also a member of, a permanent observer of the UN Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space. So every year we have a theme that helps to really target the celebrations. In years past, we have celebrated women in space, we've celebrated space and sustainability, we've celebrated space and entrepreneurship, space and climate change, and this year we are looking at living in space, which is really trying to highlight the growing interest and advancements in human habitation beyond Earth's bounds. So as the week is in progress, we're getting the data coming in of all the various events happening across the globe. So I encourage you to register the events that are happening in Namibia on our global site, through our very able national coordinator, Benjamin. And also, I didn't mention, every year we have a poster. So this is the poster on the right, the poster for 2025. And soon, and before the end of the year, we'll be putting out a call for a poster for 2026. And I'd really like to see more impressions coming from Africa. Normally we put out a global call for artistic impressions of the theme for the year. So I really like to see space interpreted from an African perspective. So when this competition is opened up, we will let the national coordinator know, and I really encourage participation in this from Namibia. So 2016, we'll be launching the theme at the end of World Space Week, and we will have to do the launch, but I won't give you the exact words yet, but we'll watch this space for that. And that is it in a nutshell, so I thank you all for your attention, and I wish you a very excellent World Space Week.
And then you had it from Almar. Now, World Space Week is an international celebration of science and technology and their contribution to the betterment of human condition, which is held every year from October the 4th to October the 10th. Now, World Space Week aims to promote awareness of space activities, inspire young people to pursue careers in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, also shortly abbreviated for STEM, and also to showcase achievements in space, science, and technology, as well as foster international cooperation in space exploration. Now, of course, the importance of the space science and technologies that for communication and connectivity, such as satellites, enable global communication, internet access, and broadcasting. And as we know that the world is now going digital, it's very important also, I guess, for science students and people that are interested in science and technology to come together, especially for this week long, and discuss the potential avenues to enhance and help actually better communication, whether it's business wise or just social wise. As we know, obviously the world is going digital, like I alluded earlier. Now, GPS and satellite navigation have become essential tools in everyday life. That is, of course, is true, especially when you move to a new place and you have no idea exactly where where you're going and navigating, then GPS also helps you where you're going and to find the location that you're going to. You know, it's become really very much easier. And she also spoke about the Etosha National Park recently suffered fires, and speaking about how if they had been some sort of detectors, space detectors that can tell that, you know what, a fire has happened here, maybe that will help contain the situation, and you will and also those working around with it, they will know where exactly to position themselves, where exactly to tackle the fire and that kind of stuff. So it's quite very important. Science and technology keeps on evolving, and it's only very important for a week like this for people to come together, industry players, innovators, science people, technology people to come together and share ideas and, you know, share also problems that have been encountered in order for them to tackle them together. So also Earth observation and climate monitoring, which is quite important in terms of space science and technology, as space technologies help monitor weather patterns, deforestation, ocean currents, and natural disasters. And you know, this is very crucial at the time where it's, for here in Namibia, run about a very beginning of the year when rain is falling so heavily, and it will be very necessary. And that's the time where our eyes are looking to the weatherman to just see what is happening tomorrow. How is the weather tomorrow? Can I travel to this particular place or not? And which route I should actually take or not, you know? So they play a vital role in climate change research and disaster response. Yeah. And scientific research and innovation, space missions expand our understanding of the universe. Also, space exploration leads to innovations in materials, robotics, medicine, and computing. Also, national security and global cooperation. Now, space capabilities are crucial for defense and surveillance. Yeah, you can easily see your enemy when they are coming and how they are coming in, and all that kind of stuff. Now, international space missions, example, the ISS, foster collaboration and peaceful exploration. Also, in terms of economic growth, the global space economy is growing rapidly with new jobs and industries emerging, with private space companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin are now revolutionizing space access. Also, for inspiration and education, as space inspires curiosity, innovation, and the desire to explore, it encourages the youth to pursue careers in STEM, that is science subjects and math subjects, and dream beyond the earth. Yeah. And right now, let's now take a listen to Lisho Mundia, who is the Deputy Executive Director of MASEC, also speaking at the event that was held yesterday, marking the beginning of Space Week.
So when we say living in space, that doesn't necessarily mean we must only go into space. And I think that that message should be clarified. What does it mean for us? For the theme, it invites us to think beyond simple exploring space. It also just really asks us to how we might explore one day to go beyond the Earth. And what is more important is how we plan for sustainable human presence in space, and how that innovation there, which is required, can also then benefit us back home. And I wanted this to reflect more on that benefit from space to us down on the Earth. This is what we call the life support system. And of course, we all really repeat, the scientists here, is Stan myself, and the young ones who are following SAMS, they will tell you, we are currently enjoying the recycling of water, the air that we breathe, and of course, generating food in and out of space. And that is enough to actually enjoy. I don't know if you are eating green peppers. Of course, I do green peppers, green peppers. We all do that. Huh? Do you know any more original? How did it come to be that pink, that green, that yellow? Do we know? Good. See, this one giving you assignments to the powers yourself. Very simple. You are here. You will be soon be here to answer all those questions. I'm just giving assignments. You will be doing the lucky. And then we should reflect on the linear energy system that works in harshing environments. That is the benefit of the seeds of living in space. And then this health challenges with ecological worldviews in confined and isolated habitats. And all this, of course, speaks to the power of space cells. We heard earlier from Prof. Anisha speaking about technology. Research in space is a enabler of imaging technologies and communication technologies. It revolves around space technology. And I think that we should really know. Because quite often people really think that it's the IPC, yes, it's the IPC combined with the space technology. The missions of telling that they can create communication just for us. We can just create just for us. And when you leave the radius where we are, you are excluding yourself. And that is space. So a lot of benefits of space that I can go on. The clean energy that we are talking about, the resilient infrastructure and so forth, that is really about the benefits of living in the space. I don't want to speak about the purpose of Space Week. Thanks to the director of the association, she has done quite good in that space. But I really want to speak about us as a ministry, and of course then the benefits to space science in Namibia. So as a ministry of education, innovation, youth, sports, arts and culture, has been the driving force, of course, of national efforts to build capacity in this strategic field of sector of space centers. And we guided by our national space centers and technology policy of 2021. We wrote this immediately after COVID, actually. I should say for me to say we continue to implement programs and developing human institutional capacity, establishing national infrastructure, and of course promoting research and innovation in space sector. And as you know, that here in Namibia we are uniquely placed to benefit from embracing the potential of space and technology. Again, the benefits of living in space. That is through astronomical and astrophysical advantage. We in Namibia is of course home to some of the world's largest skies. The Super B observatory sites of course are found here. And I think the Prof introduced himself. The dark hole was discovered with our infrastructure here. It's a great moment that we can enjoy as a country. And of course, we also have a good relationship politically or socially. We have a very good number of tourists just coming to enjoy observing our dark skies. And that's the power of living in the space. And of course, there is an aspect of education, STEM, and youth empowerment. By incorporating space science into our curriculum, we are literally supporting youth interest in science and engineering, which have been doing quite well. You will see my dear sister, Prof. Anisha, she has been doing well since she took over as CEO. Some of you that have not been attending the science fair, you would really appreciate if you start attending. You will realize how we are measuring a boy and a girl child in different segments of cells and through different competitions. And of course, that also comes with interest. We We help build workforce that, of course, encourages international space programs and the embedding of space technologies. This includes capacity development, innovation, of course, and open career pathways. We have quite a number, even though space has been fragmented, which I'll talk to later on, that of course the environment is being enabled. The power of education. We have seen quite a number of Namibians. At least they are on the IP network of my memory. We have quite a lot of experience that we're telling you it's a high development, and solar systems that are working as far as Japan, USA, Doctor around the globe. And that is the good relationship that we have created in all these countries, but more so the importance of our education system tied together in comparison to other international education systems. There is technology skill. Of course, the push in living in space demands adjustment in sustainability. This includes recycling, and the more sensing robotic and artificial intelligence application, etc. This directly relates to the challenges that we face on the Earth. If we look at the aspect of climate change that we experience, the water scarcity, the environmental monitoring, and disaster risk management, we start to appreciate the output of space as Namibia don't have satellites in space. We are on the downside. But we are grateful to the USA, the Russians, the Chinese, and even the Europeans. Their satellites are dropping their data in our country, which we use for decision making to monitor our disaster.
Joining me in studio to speak to us again about Space Week is Dwight Links. Good afternoon, Dwight, and a pleasure to have you right here on the Radar News Analysis.
How are you doing, Happy?
I'm well,
and
Dwight.
Good afternoon to the listeners.
Now, Dwight, I also did get into something on speaking about Space Week, but let's hear from you. Just how significant and important is it for such conferences to hold when you're talking about science and technology and contributions to obviously the world when you're talking about Space Week?
Well, specifically, Happy, here's the obvious direction is that in many cases, Namibia is trying to achieve the economic derivatives or the economic benefits from space science research and development. Now, Namibia, so far, we've only had one particular well-known Namibian participating in a global initiative, specifically in the space science realm, and that Namibian obviously has now obviously passed away, sadly. His name was Dr. Japie van Zyl, and he was the only Namibian to date that I can think of that actually worked for NASA in the US. If you obviously look at the particular impact someone like him has done, it obviously shows that Africans that can actually also participate in global initiatives, for example, like developments, research and development in the realm of space science. Now, Happy, here's where things get interesting, actually. As of yet, Namibia doesn't actually have any legislation on our space science realm, because if you think about the borders of the country, you can think about the same particular, what we call the air or the space above us in terms of the skies.
Mm-hmm.
That is also the other particular realm of our national frontiers. So you've got national waters in the seas and in the rivers and in lakes, and you also have a national airspace above your country.
Yeah.
So it doesn't actually extend when you've got neighbors like Namibia has, like the five neighbors on our north, south, and eastern sides, primarily because the airspace ends on your border. And there's actually a zone that reverses inwards in terms of identifying, how close you come to the border vis-a-vis on the other side, if someone else flies also a little bit too close to the border. So in this particular realm, Happy, is that we have a major, you can look at it as an opportunity, and you can also look at it as a dimension of potential fear scenarios, primarily because all of us just know that the only airspace, the only aircraft that actually operates in Namibian airspace or even on the African continent is predominantly passenger aircraft and aircraft designated for other commercial means, for example, like cargo planes and the likes like that. So there's great opportunity still vacant or still to be achieved in the Namibian space. But then if we step back a little bit and like you asked, you know, what's the significance of this particular thing, is that primarily it is to actually motivate African countries primarily to participate in this frontier of research and science development, primarily because we are literally vacant. We only have three countries that have designated space authorities, South Africa, Egypt, and someone else. There's only three countries.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Namibians can come and, you know, reference the Botswanans that launched the satellite end of last year, the start of this year. They had to launch that in the US. They didn't launch it here. There's another country that actually beat them by building Africa's first satellite here on the continent and then launching it themselves. So we obviously have these if I can't say lack of developments, but primarily it is a scenario of also prioritizing what needs need to come first. So the importance is that we don't have legislation yet on this particular realm. Obviously we've got legislation on land and land resources. Obviously we will have legislation on national waters and the marine and aquatic resources within them, but we don't have legislation geared towards the airspace above Namibia. And it obviously also, in many other obvious cases, it speaks towards the satellite technologies that would be needed and that would help with other information, informations that could help determine, for example, you know, what kind of rainfall we can expect or what kind of particular imminent weather patterns Namibia look forward to. So those are some of the immediate benefits, but there's obviously also other vast amounts of other benefits that can accrue or develop from actually having a designated, firstly, a space authority, and then secondly, legislation that backs up this authority.
Quite interesting. Now, of course, you did speak about, and it was actually on my mind as well, Botswana making history with the launch of its first satellite, Botswana Sat 1, otherwise in March the 5th earlier this year in Lagos, California. Just perhaps how do we do similar like Botswana? Like you did speak about how we don't have any legislation or policies regarding anything space here right here in Namibia, and which is quite very important, you know. One of the speakers did speak about how perhaps we could have monitored the situation if there were, you know, like detectors for fire with the fire that just happened in Etosha. You know, it's things like this that sometimes that are very significant, but they look so insignificant that we sometimes, I guess, don't really invest in or put effort in. And I'm sure, Dwight, while you tackle that topic, I also want you to talk about, I'm sure we also have some students or learners who are quite interested in this. How do we maybe incorporate them in things like this, like conferences like this? Some would be really interested but would want to hear about it way earlier so that they can also partake and share their ideas.
Well, here's the thing, Happy. Actually, when it comes to the realm of science itself, there is a multitude of disciplines that any student can actually follow. So even if you become an accountant or you're studying accounting, you would still have a role to play in the realm of science, because you have to look at cost budgeting. And in many cases, people forget that the materials, the instruments, the lab facilities and all other manner of items that are needed in order for the research and development to be done, they cost money. And I mean, one of the interesting jokes that I always read about on the internet had been specifically how people asked, why hasn't humanity landed more human, why didn't we have more planned human landings on the moon after Neil Armstrong and his team were the first in the 60s to land on the moon? And one of some of the jokingly answers that are given sometimes is that Well, it's because accounting started working against the science programs because they started realizing things would cost a lot more money.
Mm.
The budgets would start expanding, would start growing and stuff like that. But it also had meant, in the same time, the budgets nonetheless still expanded. It also gave an opportunity, Happy, that private sector could get involved in government programs specifically around space exploration and the likes. One of the audios that I did not send there for you was a discussion that was a panel discussion of various scientists who cited that Namibia has been approached for space tourism by outside entities, and these are predominantly private sector entities from other parts of the world.
Yeah.
Now, if you go look up where does space tourism come from, Happy, space tourism obviously has a scientific element to it, but it has a humanities perspective to it because the aspect in terms of any element of trade is based upon, firstly, can people go and visit your country if we're going to trade with each other? Yes or no.
Mm.
So space tourism, because of Namibia, is very robust and resilient. Okay, the resilience factor, we still need to measure and still need to achieve that. But Namibia is a robust tourism industry because we're one of the few countries in the world that actually has listed tourism as a sector. Other countries don't list tourism as a sector. They list it as a subsector that is interconnected to many other sectors, which is a bit weird.
Mm.
But still. Is that there's an opportunity here, but here's the thing, Happy. You've got to ask yourself in terms of the discussion of, you know, what can we actually see growing from a space tourism perspective? But that's a question that will just still hanging there, which we should just keep it hanging there because we don't know the sector. Space tourism means you need to bring in scientists, you need to build specific, facilities, and as you and I know, tourism to be in Namibia, tourism to you and me, Happy, is that you and I as a Namibian, we can also access facilities that are meant for international tourists or continental tourists.
Mm-hmm.
So if we've got a tourism mechanism that is not accessible to you and me, then it sort of like speaks to an exclusivity element in some scenario.
True.
And currently right now, tourism is being touted as to be the most inclusive sector in Namibia because it technically is the most inclusive economic sector in the country, which can employ anyone. It can give an opportunity to anyone, and anyone can participate in it as long as you have the right particular, let's call it like mechanisms in place to actually derive a benefit from it.
True. Although the prices are quite dubious, I feel like they are majorly catering for tourists and not really for locals here in Namibia, for some areas, not all of them, but yeah.
Well, it was also proven back in 2021, 2022 that the biggest problem was specifically for Namibian locals, Namibians to try and support the local Namibian tourism sector was that in many cases, some of the destinations are too far away. The Namibians that have the money, that can spend the money at tourist destinations, most of us live in the large urban settlements of Namibia. So this is Windhoek. This is the coast. This is Kietmanshoop. This is Otjiwarongo. This is Oshakati. And you can also throw Rundu in there and probably Gobabis. And if you had to look at the distances for like some of the game farms and some of the particular sort of like remote lodges, in many cases, you'll have to drive 300 kilometers into the bush.
Yeah.
And many Namibians are, we are way too used to the urban lifestyles that we've lived. Obviously, in those scenarios, you can obviously see who those far-flung tourist destinations are catered for. They are designated specifically for a tourist that is trying to escape a European city lifestyle or an American city lifestyle or an Asian city lifestyle. They're flying off to Namibia or Africa. Ticket prices are cheaper, accommodation is cheaper, food is cheaper for them, petrol is cheaper for them. Whereas to you and me, the drive already will work against us.
Yeah.
Meaning the petrol cost will already work against us.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at these things and then you can actually see the fact in the statement that you cited there, primarily that, you know, in many cases, some tourist facilities would be positioned to international tourists versus local Namibian tourists who can also potentially participate in supporting. But the thing is, Happy, we can't just focus on space tourism for that matter because
as I mentioned, you know, there are various particular kinds of things that first have to be weighed upon or have to be balanced or weighted.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we had space tourism, obviously, yes, it would sound very cool to have an Elon Musk fly here to mm-hmm. Namibia just to fly into the space. But mm-hmm. here's the thing then, Happy. If you had to hear the astronomical costs of space tourism, many of the people that have participated in this realm from the various companies that have been positioned around the world to cater for space tourism. I mean, one of the first space tourists was a Japanese billionaire of last year.
Mm.
And he at least, his minimum payment was supposed to be something like $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see the ticket price that you're paying for to fly into space? So $10 million, which is 200 million Namibian dollars, which is close to many budgets that many ministries and many companies and entities mm-hmm. in Namibia get, is a significant amount of money just to fly into space and fly back. So yes, you can see that there is an opportunity for Namibia in many cases. The more, in terms of the discussions that took place, is that it's more that Namibia is viewed as a preferred destination for research and development means, as opposed to, let's call it, like, leisure and recreational means regarding the space science perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not to say that we have a long distance to go. Many of the particular talks that emanated from the space science engagement yesterday is that primarily discussions are on the way in the government realm in terms of drafting and putting together the legislation for a space science or for space science legislation for that matter. So they'll first have to start with a draft. They'll first have to start with public engagements and stakeholder engagements to understand, you know, what should go into this thing. And the downside is I heard there firsthand at the presentations and discussions that were given, is that we've got a very small private sector participation in this particular sector.
Mm.
And so if you go to other countries, mm-hmm. it's a major presence.
Mm-hmm. By private sector. Dwight, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still
okay.
here.
Just that aspect that you're pulling out, you mentioned it earlier, and also about private sectors also coming into I almost said into space, but yeah, coming into space and also playing their part. But before I do let you go, let's talk about the upcoming conference on disaster risk management as part of the climate change and features in Africa conference organized by the Human Science Research Council of South Africa. That's going to happen later this month. I'm quite excited for that one, specifically because it's disaster risk management. And of course, we just dealt with a disaster with the wildfires, and not only that, also disaster management in terms of emergencies. Should a disaster actually happen right here in Namibia right now, do you think we have the capabilities? Are the stakeholders, do they have perhaps communications that are speaking to each other to say, you know, there's a disaster that has happened here and here, can we be able to come together and sort it out? What's your say on that?
Well, the thing is, Happy, that obviously the Namibian government has invested already in their own scenario.
Mm.
In many cases, some of the particular data analysis, for example, like the statement regarding the bushfire or the runaway fire that impacted Etosha National Park, in many cases, they had systems in place in terms of generating data, generating information. Obviously, in many cases, it is manual means and methods that they have to deploy to view, you know, what was, or gather the data and gather the information about impacted animals regarding the fire and the likes. When it came to the floods, specifically like in the north of Namibia, the flood situation that, and yesterday's discussion was actually highlighted by the Deputy Executive Director of MASAC, that being Mr. Lisho Mundia, who cited that every time when the north floods with the water that flows from Angola into Namibia, that it's actually, what's the term? It's actually tropical rainfall that fell in DRC, that flowed into Angola, flowed across Angola and into Namibia, which obviously shows you firstly, that how good this particular activity is. Secondly, it also shows you the opportunity in terms of Namibians or our particular space science sector has the opportunity to try and assess things beforehand. So you put up early warning systems, which the Ministry of Agriculture has already. And I remember the famous particular quote that was highlighted in the speech by the former Minister of Agriculture, Kali Schledwein, that was not last year, but the year before, 2023, where they had to go and assess why the early warning system, you know, were there any early warning systems for the potential floodwaters coming through from Angola? What was this response? Why didn't things happen? And it was cited specifically that there is an early warning system put up by the Minister of Agriculture. It was damaged because of local vandalism in the vicinities where these systems were installed. And the downside was primarily that it obviously had negative impacts on people, their lifestyles, their lives, their infrastructure, their assets, and any other particular, you know, loss and damage scenarios that, that occurred. If you view the disaster risk management discussion in light of space science technology, or, you know, you position it under or right next to this particular conversation we started on, disaster risk management is greatly reliant on satellite information. And that is obviously also one of the particular things that Africa requires, is that we need more countries that develop their own particular space programs, specifically in the realm of firstly being able to build their own satellites. And I found the country that actually was one of the first. It's South Africa and Algeria and Egypt that are designated as the first countries, and Nigeria even, that have built and launched their own satellites. Vis-a-vis what Botswana did, because someone else built it for Botswana and Botswana just had to pay a fee. So it's almost like a rental leasing fee, you know, like you walking to a shop, you know, the brand Nike builds and makes the shoe for you and your shoe size. You like it, you buy it from the shop that bought the shoe on your behalf, positioning it there. So it was that kind of a situation for Botswana. But it actually helps Botswana chart its own particular course in terms of data management, data analysis around various other kinds of weather anomalies and weather patterns and climatic conditions. Now, Happy, here's the biggest concern. Your earlier question, which I also partly answered in terms of citing that there is a space programs already happening in Namibia, is primarily it's just concentrated at one university, at the University of Namibia. It's not broadly distributed over our big three, over the other two universities. It's just concentrated in one university. So you can obviously also see primarily that there is also just a specific channeling in terms of this skills development and knowledge sharing scenario. And in many cases, if you go and look at the disciplines that would be needed greatly in space science and space science research and development, the panel discussion that had the discussion yesterday cited you can bring in geologists, you can bring in chemists, you can even bring in a botanist, you know, someone that is a specialist in plants. You can bring in the much crucial and much more important person that you need is a physicist. So whether it be a nuclear physicist, an astrophysicist, or any other kinds of physicists, the basic person that you first need on your skills, in your skills development programs would be a physicist. The unfortunate thing is, Happy, you can literally count on your hand how many physicists Namibia has produced. One of them sits in Vienna. One of them obviously was the now deceased, gentleman that worked at NASA, who was from Otjiwarongo. Then there's another physicist that lives at the coast. I think there's one more physicist that also works with the Ministry of Mines and Energy. And so far, you can clearly see how small is this particular breed of specialists in Namibia, is that we actually need to produce a lot more of these guys. The downside is, Happy, South Africa has got experience in training physicists. I think Yapi van Zyl, the guy that worked at NASA, he was a Stellenbosch alumni. So it also obviously shows you the catching up race that Namibia has to participate in order to develop. Firstly, they've got to you first have to, these people first need to be trained somewhere else before you can set up a department. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you will just set up a department, hire a bunch of foreigners to come cheat, to come teach us again.
Mm.
And then we'll be sitting with the same scenario on whether or not, you know, it's of an adequate level. The second scenario is also the biggest concern has been, where has Namibia been in development? Research and Development Report of 2024, which the NCRST revealed last year or brought out last year, cited specifically, firstly, government has not been spending enough on research and development. There's been a drop in the financing of programs associated to research and development. Obviously, the most important impact was COVID, and the measurement actually took place from 2021 or from 2018 up to 2023. So, which obviously gave you an indication specifically that COVID was a great particular impactful event. The second scenario has been private sector has not been engaging as much in the realms of humanities, mm-hmm. anything to do with society in Namibia, but they've been spending a lot of money in understanding nature, the climate, other scientific genres and spheres of the Namibian landscape, of Namibia in its entirety, which also shows you that there is an imbalance of the focus areas for research and development. So there is a lot of things that gets researched, developed, and probably refined in, and then there's not so many things that ultimately get abandoned or get ignored. The biggest drawback, unfortunately, is this is also another thing I have to lay in, and which is not cited as much by the various stakeholders in the Namibian research and development sector, is that Namibia is very weak on generating its own knowledge, much like many other African counterparts and African neighbors. We are very weak. One of the biggest concerns have been, if you look, for example, like at our marine resources, many of the fishing companies bring in their own marine biologists from Europe. These guys come and collect data, refine the data, analyze the data, and then fly back to Europe with the data. The data doesn't stay in Namibia. If we send these Namibians that we love sending on scholarships to Asia and Europe and North America, they go there, they go write wonderful theses and reports on Namibia and Africa, but the knowledge stays there. The knowledge cannot come to Namibia because of intellectual property agreements. And you obviously see the disadvantage we sit with as Namibia. So thus, it means that Namibia, we are stuck in a realm specifically of our own research and development, and secondly, in that the knowledge is not contained in Namibia. It's not archived here. It's not available here.
Yeah.
You have to work through a mediary or through a middleman position in terms of achieving the knowledge based upon the knowledge that was collected on Namibia.
Quite, that's quite a handful, hey, and I sure hope that for those who are really interested in space and science and technology, will also take up their space in this particular angle, so that Namibia's story can also change in terms of that. But yeah.
Not a problem,
Happy. Okay.
Alright.
And of course, there we had it from my colleague Dwight Links. Dwight Links is our reporter and journalist right here at Eagle FM. Also just speaking about Space Week and educating us on Namibia's stance right now in terms of space and how we taken up space, if we have even taken up in any of that. But of course, this is on the Radar News Analysis. Studio line is very much open for you to come through and air your opinions right here. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. We'll see you right after the commercial break.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved IMBA that brings together various hymn books under one app, here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on IMBA app are the Elsine Hangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of IMBA hymn books. 081-235-8063. You can also email us at digital@omalighty.com. Download and discover IMBA today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store. Shiwana Shana Mibia, Kamberera Omakarunga Koe Pamwe na IMBA. Inokara Wurikwanima Yesiga. Endera pamwe nethimbo muyuni wa technology. Imonena eimbiro joe mwene kongo dhiyoye yopeke pamwe na IMBA. IMBA oteta pamwe oshiwana no kwanja kakaneka onjimbo moshiwana ashihe sha Namibia. Moka epaka IMBA otamu adhika ehwata joonjimbo dhoongereka dhayooloka. Ngaashi ehangano ja Elsin, omaimburiro joshiherero, Simane Kakarunga ja Katolika Karoma, joshimburu Sang Fortier noongereka dhimwe. Tudengera nena ngere owapumba omaimbiro oongereka yoye gakale ga gwedhwako koka epa ka imbako nora 081-23-58-063 nenge ututumine o email ko digital@omalighty.com. Oto vuru ku adha oka epa ka imbako App Store noko Google Play Store. Imonena imbagoye nena.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushe indike nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile ko mderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. President Netumbona Ndaitwe held a high-level meeting with the leadership of the Independent Patriots for Change, also known as IPC, at the State House as part of her administration's ongoing efforts to promote constructive engagement between the government and opposition parties. Now, the IPC delegation was led by the party president, that is Dr. Panduleni Itula, and Emmanuel Nashinge, leader of the official opposition in parliament, accompanying President Netumbona Ndaitwe with Vice President Lucia Witboy, Prime Minister Dr. Elian Ngurayre, Director General of the National Planning Commission, Dr. Kyrie Mbwende, and several senior government officials. Now, joining me in studio now telephonically is political analyst Rui Chitende to discuss on the importance of such an engagement between the ruling party and the official opposition party. Very good afternoon, Rui Chitende. Welcome to On the Radio News Analysis.
Good afternoon and good greetings to your listeners.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, Richard, and there is a political analyst. Just what do you think about this recent engagement between the ruling party and the official opposition party, having to come down and discuss on certain matters that, of course, are of concern and are of national priorities?
Well, look, this is not the first time an engagement of this sort has happened. It has also happened under the late President Geingob, where he would invite leaders of the opposition to discuss things of national importance.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why this is done, it has nothing to do with the actual material conditions of the people, people that are battling with poverty, unemployment, hunger, and food insecurity. It's symbolic. It's symbolic in nature. It's just to show or illustrate to the Namibian public or to the world out there that a governing party, the sitting president, can have discussions with the opposition. In other words, the relationship is not acrimonious. Mm. They can talk to one another. But in terms of real policy issues of what it is that they are exchanging, you can discuss unemployment. So what about unemployment?
Yeah.
Does it mean that President Ndaitwe will take certain policy positions of IPC as contained in their 2024 manifesto and implement them? That's not going to happen. So what are they discussing? what are the plans, and how to, whatever it is that they are discussing, does it supplement or complement IPCC's manifesto as well as that of the governing party.
Mm.
So it's a talk show. It's symbolic. It has no meaning to the ordinary person on the street. It's just to show that the president is also engaging with opposition figures. It's part of a democracy. The opposition have accepted the results of the 2024 elections. It's there to legitimize the president. That's it. We shouldn't read too much into this.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with us ordinary citizens. It's politicians shaking hands, drinking tea, drinking juice, but it does not speak to the problems that the country is currently facing.
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to resolve it? Yes, the governing party has told us about their 5-year manifesto. It's early stages, very early to judge as to whether they'll be able to perform or not. So I don't want to make an assessment on that. We will have to look at the policy implementation implications thereof based on what they've promised the Namibian electorate.
Mm-hmm. Now, just going beyond politics now, of course, they are politicians, but if we were to go beyond politics and them just getting into the real core discussion of what's affecting everyday Namibians and actually implementing, taking ideas from official opposition party and actually implementing them. Because I'm sure even if you have an opposing person to what you are doing, of course, they will have some ideas that yourself can implement to the benefit of those people that both of you are looking onto. Just what do you think if that was to happen, where would the country go? Not just now looking at Namibia's context, but overall, if economies could actually come together and enable, you know, those dialogues, but then do tangible discussions that will bring results for the ordinary people, what do you think that will take countries?
You see, that's a very good question. First of all, Panduleni Itula was the major contender against the governing party's presidential candidate in 2019 as well as 2024.
Mm-hmm.
So he sees himself and his party as the alternative to SWAPO, meaning SWAPO's policies, SWAPO's style of governance is not what Namibia needs. They have a better alternative, okay? Secondly,
mm-hmm.
is should the governing party adopt some of the policies of the opposition, let's make use of Namibia as an example.
Okay.
Should they adopt the policies and strategies and development plans of the IPC and they implement it? What do you think will happen in a space of 3 years should those ideas and policy proposals be successful?
It will make
SWAPO look bad. So they would have committed political suicide. By giving the opposition a silver platter to say, you know what? This is the policies that we were promising you guys.
Yeah.
We gave it to SWAPO, but they only implemented, for argument's sake, 40%. What if you gave us a national mandate instead of SWAPO? Because they were actually implementing what we have told them. Unfortunately, the nature of politics is always about the opposites. Even if the opposition has the best policy, the best ideas of transform society for the better, it would not be the interest of the governing party. That's how they think. It would not be in their interest to implement those. Privately, they will say this is a very good policy, but let's try it and reshape it, not now, but maybe in the future, such that the opposition does not claim credit for the success of this policy.
Interesting question.
The people, of course, will benefit. We will benefit as a citizenry, depending on what that policy is. But it will not be in the interest of SWAPO to do that. I can give you a classical example.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the South, for example. What SWAPO is not in charge at the regional and local authority level in those two regions.
Yeah.
We also know, looking at the development budget, that those two regions are getting quite insignificant amounts for development. It doesn't mean that the opposition doesn't have ideas of how they want to transform society. It also doesn't mean that SWAPO does not have it. But should they do that, ELPM will claim credit for having succeeded to provide services at a local and regional authority level and tell the Namibian public, this is what we have been able to do with the mandate that you have given us. But this is only at local and regional level. What if you give us a national mandate? That will make SWAPO look very bad, and they are not keen on pursuing that path.
Interesting. What particular aspect would you say we could learn from this? Just as now as you answer that question, I wasn't thinking in that line, obviously, but you're a political analyst. You would be able to calculate better. What also from this particular, scenario now, what can we ordinary Namibians learn from it? You know, such as now, a historic moment of the head of state shaking hands with the opposition, official opposition party leader.
There's nothing historic about this moment. As I've said before, Gangkop has done it before.
Yeah,
it happens in the politics of the region. It's nothing extraordinary. It's a matter of political posturing. It is symbolic. It has no real meaning or impact in terms of how it affects our lives as citizens. I'm not sure whether there was an exchange as the media. Let me just ask this question. Did you guys see what was on the agenda to be discussed?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, There's nothing. Were there any exchanging of policy documents, development strategy pertaining to oil and gas, agriculture, housing? That may be either complements Swapo Party Manifesto or the current national development plans, especially that of six. Mm. If there's nothing like that that has been exchanged, if there were no talks about the direction that the country is going and how do we remedy it. This was a mere talk shop of politicians meeting, drinking coffee, shaking hands, looking good for the camera, and we should not read too much into it.
Rich Tende, you have no idea how I appreciate boldness and honesty from a guest. But thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis. That's exactly why Eagle FM platform is there for the voices of the masses and, of course, for the reality what's on ground. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome.
Okay. Now, this is On The Reader News Analysis. Your voice matters here as well. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Please come through air opinions and contributions right here on The Reader News Analysis. Of course, your honesty is very much appreciated. With that being said, let's pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly with what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators and trading economics.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Dieru, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-0683. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Welcome back and now brace yourself for what's making headlines today in terms of economic indicators. We're starting off with the Namibian dollar compared to the US dollar. So one US dollar today will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 21 cents, while one Australian dollar will get you 11 Namibian dollars and 32 cents. £1 sterling is equals to 23 Namibian dollars, 0.07 cents. One Swiss franc is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 56 cents. One Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 29 cents. Now moving over to trading economics. Zinc futures in the UK were above $3,015 per ton mark for the first time this year, now erasing its sharp losses year to date amid compounding threats to supply. The International Lead and Zinc Study Group noted that mined zinc production rose 6.3% annually in the first half of 2025, but bottlenecks in refiners drove output of refined metal to drop over 2%. That was consistent with the output curbs among smelters in Kazakhstan. Smelter output was also due to drop in Japan with the closure of the key Toho Zinc Anakta plant, while output for Mitsui Mining Exports at 6.6%. Now, annual decline in refined zinc output during the second half of the financial year. Likewise, treatment charges for zinc rose to $87.5 per ton after being negative in the end of last year, according to surveys from the Shanghai Metals Market. Consequently, open stocks of high-grade zinc at the London Metals Exchange plummeted to 30,000 per ton compared to 171,500 at the start of the year. Now, the yield on Germany's 10-year bond climbed above 2.73%, reaching its highest level since September 26, as investors kept a close eye on political developments in France and the United States. Outgoing French Prime Minister Sebastian Lecornu has embarked on 2 days of last-ditch negotiations following his unexpected resignation, aiming to resolve the country's political crisis. Meanwhile, the U.S. government shutdown showed no signs of easing, raising concerns that delays in key data releases could complicate Federal Reserve policy decisions. Yields were further supported by HSBC's revised forecast, which anticipated a limited scope for additional European Central Bank rate cuts. Now, investor sentiments are also reflecting Germany's announcement of increased bond issuance for the final quarter of the year, aimed at funding higher infrastructure and defense spending. North Macedonia's annual inflation rate is to 4% in September 2025, from 4.4% in August, marking the lowest leading in 4 months. Now, the slowdown was mainly driven by a sharp deceleration in prices for food and non-alcoholic beverages, which fell to 4.3% from 6.2% in August. Now, inflation also slowed in clothing and footwear at 3% versus 3.3%, furniture, household goods and regular household maintenance at 5% versus 5.3%, and restaurant and hotels at 3.4% versus 4.4%. Foreign exchange reserves in Singapore grew to $506.83 billion in September 2025. That is from SGD $502.2 billion in the previous month. Now, the improvement was mainly driven by higher gold and foreign exchange holdings, which grew to SGD $496.69 billion from SDG $491.92 billion. Now, of course, this brings us to the end of trading economics and economic indicators. We pause right here now and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we'll be telling you what's making headline in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Siwanasha Namibia, kamberera omakarunga koe pamwe na imba. Inokara uri kwanima yesiga. Endera pamwe nethimbo muyuni wa technology. Imonena eimbiro joe mwene kongo dhiyoe yopeke pamwe na imba. Imba oteta pamwe oshiwana no kwanja kakaneka onjimbo moshiwana ashihe sha Namibia. Moka epaka imba otamu adhika ehwata joonjimbo dhoongereka dhayooloka. Ngaashi ehangano ja Elsin, omaimburiro joshiherero, simane kakarunga ja katolika karoma, Josh Mburu sang 40 year no ngereka dimwe tibengera nena ngere wapumba omaimbiro ongereka yoe lakarega webako koka epa ka imbako nora hetatu imwe barindatu tano hetatu nora hamano datu nenge ututumine o email ko digital@omalaiti.com otovuru ku adha oka epa ka imbako app store noko google play store imonena imbagoe nena.
Welcome back for News Beyond the Borders. We're starting off in South Africa, whereby the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, also known as SCOPER, has begun its inquiry into the Road Accident Fund. Let's take a listen.
News worth your attention this Tuesday. The Standing Committee on Public Accounts, that SCOPER, is doing crucial work. They are set to hear from officials from the Road Accident Fund, but it's before that, they're engaging officials from the Transport Department as they look into claims of misused public funds and poor management. Speaking currently is Nkululeko Shengwa, who's ironically the former chairperson of SCOPER, but is there in his capacity as the deputy minister of the Transport Department. Let's listen in.
To insure my leg if my leg is expensive, and not to turn to RAF as a means of bridging that. So the socioeconomic challenges that colleagues raise for me are fundamental, because they are what bring us to this backlog. They are the issue of access there, and then the issue of liabilities that colleagues correctly point out to, and amongst others, Chair, the Concord action, which REF is involved in, and the Auditor General, the directive that remains the position of the ministry since arrival and now, is that the AG must pull out, I mean the REF must pull out of that action with the AG in court. And we find a responsible way within the accounting standards to deal with the liabilities question. Lastly, Chair, you make an example which I think must not be taken lightly, about how somebody approached you to assist you and you made about somebody being hurt, emgidin. That is part of the corruption within the REF ecosystem. I've made the example here how my brother was accosted and being hijacked and beaten up by people, and we rushed him to hospital, and I came out outside to somebody said, you should have said it was a car accident. That is part of the corruption embedded within the REF ecosystem. And so we must not lose sight of the fact that people see REF as a money-making scheme. And so the stringent claim processes are amongst others, but maybe we can say REF, you know, done a claims process overreach and went above and beyond strengthening its processes. But in part, it's a response to the corruption embedded within how people kick off a claim process. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. Can we just get those answers dealt with in 10, and then we'll go on break?
Chair, thanks. I think I would want to speak to Honorable Mende. I think one of the questions you asked is, why would somebody make an offer and then thereafter probably want to deal with it? Potentially, because I have not seen the case, and I would want you to give me the case and we'll then give you a written response. We'll investigate what's going on there and provide your written response. But potentially, sometimes people might make offers that they're not supposed to make, and if they are found fundamentally to be problematic in law, then they might have to be dealt with in a court of law. But I am not sure of the specifics of what you have there. Can you indulge us to have a look at it, and then we will put in writing exactly what could have transpired there, because I don't want to make, you know, assertions, and I'm not sure what could have been the fundamental fight the RAF is having with that particular claim. But we will share, look at it, and respond in writing to the committee and explain what could have transpired in that particular claim.
Meanwhile, secondary school deaths in Ghana leave parents seeking for justice. Let's take a listen from BBC Africa.
Decided not to work. I decided not to talk to anyone. Who do I live for? Because he was all that I had.
Kevin Moses was full of promise when he started at Achimota High School. But in 2016, he became unwell. His mother tried desperately to reach the school for help.
The first time Kevin went to school, Kevin did not come back. He called that he was not feeling fine. He's been to the school clinic. They've given him Brufen. I called. The housemaster never picked my call. I sent messages. He did not reply. Only for him to come and give me an answer the following day that Kevin is fine. That fateful Friday afternoon, I had a call from the housemaster that Kevin has been rushed to Achimota Hospital. Sunday, when I got to the hospital, I was waiting outside. Then they came to tell me that the doctor wanted to see me. He said, we did all we could. We've lost Kevin.
Kevin died of cerebral malaria. He had been in a coma for 2 days.
That was a difficult interview to have. You could tell that she's struggling to move on, and understandably so, because she had a beautiful bond, a very strong bond with her son.
But Sonia isn't alone. We're heading to meet another grieving parent whose story echoes hers. Joseph is visiting his son's grave for the very first time.
Now, over the past 2 years, two Ghanaian families have been in court seeking justice against secondary boarding schools. They are accused of negligence in the deaths of their children. Between May 2023 and February 2024, 6 students across Ghana's secondary boarding schools died in incidents that families say could have been prevented. Now, in a landmark ruling, Ghana's High Court found Achimota High School negligent in the death of 15-year-old Kevin Moses, a decision the school is now appealing. Of course, when you talk about boarding schools, it's quite very important for us parents who have children at boarding schools to ensure that we do check the living conditions that they are passing through. Now, with that being said, let's move on with other news. Egypt's inflation has dropped, boosting economic optimism.
Ago, I spoke to Yom El Hamaki, a professor of economics at Ain Shams University. Now, inflation, as we've just discussed, that may have fallen from peaks of 38% in September 2023 to 12% last month. But have wage hikes in Egypt kept up with that brutal erosion of purchasing power? That's where our conversation began.
The government has increased the minimum wage levels for Egyptians 2 times. Maybe this helped to some extent to compensate the impact of devaluation and inflation and their impact on the purchasing power of Egyptians. Besides, we have to notice that most Egyptians they have different way to increase their income. Many of them, they are working in 2 places, maybe this is heavy for them, but they are trying to compensate the impact. I believe that one of the main goal for the government nowadays is to improve the productivity of Egyptians so that to enable them to have more income, and I believe this will help a lot to compensate and to enhance purchasing power.
Some economists reckon that between that decline in inflation that we're seeing at the moment and the Egyptian pound strengthening, it's at the strongest level it's been all year at the moment, the central bank has room to cut interest rates, hopefully for the fourth time later on this month. But even if they do cut, is that enough to revive consumer demand to make that the main driver of economic growth?
Yes, the consumer still the main driver for economic growth. But for Egypt, I believe that we have in our economic development, sustainable development plan for the Vision 2030, we have a very ambitious goal to enhance, exports to arrive to $145 billion within the coming 3 years. I believe this may be a very important challenge that we are all, as civil society and government, are working hard to achieve such goal. And as I mentioned, by enhancing the productivity of Egyptians, nowadays we have reform in our educational system. We are taking care more of technical education. Technical schools nowadays are performing quite well in cooperation with businessmen and women. I believe all these types of reform may help a lot to enhance the productivity and therefore to enhance income for consumers. Still, the consumers are a vehicle for activating economic progress in Egypt.
A key part of the $8 billion loan program that Egypt has with the IMF at the moment is to, among other things, level the playing field between public entities and privately owned firms, but at the same time to also shrink the size of the state by divesting from some of the state-owned entities that it has at the moment. Progress in divesting has been slow, however. Why is that?
Actually, several reasons behind that. First of all, the situation of our stock market. We always been waiting for the right time, the suitable time for IPO. Another thing that we have a lot of work to be done regarding specifying the right value for our assets, so that, and we referred in that to IFC. This is quite important so that we can have international expertise in this matter. But I would like to shed some light on other dimension besides that we are taking care of the program of IPO and we are trying to progress faster in it. But we have another dimension, which is a partnership between private and public sector. Nowadays, our public sector companies, we are trying to reform them. We are trying to introduce the private sector into working to activate the unexploited resources, huge unexploited resources in these companies. And we are working hard on this. So I believe this will open the door for more share of the private sector and activating the role in the economy.
Meanwhile, Israel and Hamas have begun indirect talks in Egypt on Donald Trump's Gaza peace plan.
Ending the war in the Middle East and those crucial talks aimed at ending the war in Gaza. It's being reported that indirect talks between Israeli and Hamas negotiators have begun in Egypt. The negotiations are aimed at trying to reach agreement on the US peace plan. President Trump has urged everyone involved to move fast. Well, the first phase of the plan involves the release of all remaining Israeli hostages and the release of hundreds of Palestinian detainees. So let's head to Tel Aviv and our chief international correspondent, Lise Doucette, who's there for us. Lise, over to you.
Yes, you join us here in what is now known as Hostages Square in the heart of Tel Aviv. It's very quiet, as you can see behind me, almost no one in the square tonight. Today is the beginning of the Holy Jewish Festival of Sukkot, so Israelis are not gathering here today on the eve of the October the 7th, second year mark of the grievous Gaza war. But tomorrow, this square will be filled with families of the hostages, those who've come home, and those who are still being held in the Gaza Strip. There's a big, big clock behind me in bright red letters, which marks how long it has been since the hostages were taken. 730 days, 13 hours, 30 minutes, 32 seconds. The families of the hostages, the vast majority of Israelis and many beyond, are daring to hope that this could be the week when the last of the hostages, living or dead, will come home. And many the world over, and most of all in the Gaza Strip, are also hoping that the suffering of Palestinians will finally ease, that the talks which have just got underway, the indirect talks between Israel and Hamas, will succeed, at least in the first phase. Let's bring in my colleague, Barbara Perlett-Usher in Jerusalem, to get a bit of an assessment about just how likely is the possibility that the hostages will be exchanged for prisoners and a ceasefire will come into force this week. How is it looking, Barbara? While it's certainly possible, Lees, you have these talks started now in Sharm el-Sheikh in the resort of the Sinai. Indirect talks, as you said, Arab mediators shuttling back and forth. The Hamas delegation being led by Khalil al-Hayya, who the Israelis tried to kill last month. You remember he survived that Israeli airstrike on Qatar, and yet now here they are. So they have, both sides have expressed willingness or shown willingness to try to reach some kind of agreement on this first phase of Mr. Trump's plan. And they are basically looking at the technical details of how to do this hostage for prisoner exchange. So they're trying to work out the conditions on the ground as to where and how the hostages would be released. The Red Cross is standing by. Conditions for a ceasefire that would make this possible. Arrangements for how to retrieve the bodies of the deceased, because 28 of the hostages are thought to be dead. But it will take some time to find them because they are buried somewhere in the rubble of Gaza. And so arrangements need to be made for that. Then looking at the prisoner list, that will be quite tricky, Lise, because 250 of them are meant to be high-level or life-sentence prisoners, and the Israelis see them as a severe security threat, whereas Hamas will really push for them because they'll be seen as the Palestinian resistance. So that will be a tricky one. But as I said, there is a willingness, I think, to achieve something here, and you have President Trump really demanding that that be done, saying that this should be done by the end of the week. So that's an impetus behind them. When they get to the second phase, which has to do with very complex issues about the future of Gaza, that might be something else. But this does look doable at this point, although it will not necessarily be easy negotiations.
Barbara. And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Now, do stay tuned for the Uncle Nana Dingy program brought to you by Matias Sangara. For me, Dafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye. I'll see you again next time tomorrow. Same time, same place, same radio frequency right here on Eagle FM from 1300 hours to 1430 for On the Radar News Analysis. Have a great day.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipuranenge no wapumbwa eva tere urikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana. O nongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitida mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka. Okupitida oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetida o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bari heari nola natu heari bari no heari. Ile konderewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu batatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.